Appalachia, the word that evokes a whole passel of reactions. Everything from the beauty of a mountaintop to trailer parks, drugs, and about everything in between. The Appalachian Mountains are indeed the oldest mountains in the world. They once towered 30,000 feet into the air. They stretch from eastern Canada through 14 states all the way to Louisiana. The folks who live in these mountains have faced an unending number of tragic and just plain odd happenings that cry out for the telling. Hello, I'm Larry Bentley, and I was born and raised in these very mountains by a family who themselves were born, raised, and lived for generations in the heart of the Appalachian Mountains. Come with me and we'll take a look at some of the unending stories that come from within my beloved mountains. And we'll look through the eyes of an old Appalachian at some outside the area as well. Welcome to Season 4 of Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Howdy, my good friends. I hope you're doing well today. Thank you so much for stopping by. Now, there are folks that have things happen to them that just don't ever have any explanation, or as some folks call it, I guess, closure. I personally know that when a member of your family passes on, there ain't ever no closure. It's kind of like you're stuck hanging there with a big hole in your life and heart, I guess, where that person used to be. And folks, that ain't never goes away, I don't think, for anybody. But what would add to that would be not knowing exactly what happened to them, let alone where the heck they are. In fact, not knowing anything at all other than they were here one day and gone the next. Now, before they leave this world, the siblings of Reba Catlett, who suffered just that very thing, would like to know what really happened to her back in 1992. They don't believe for a minute that their sister, who was a Sevierville homemaker and a real estate investor, just decided to one day pick up her split-tail gown and run off to start a whole new life somewhere else at the age of 57. Now, she might sure enough leave her husband, Daryl. Heck, she'd done that before, but she wouldn't leave the rest of her family twisting in the wind without so much as a word. And it's a mystery that the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation and Special Agent Maria Cutshaw is determined to solve nowadays. So have you sit down, make yourself at home, and let me tell you what happened back in June 15th, 1992. Folks, I reckon it'd probably be fair to say that the Catlett's had a tough row to hoe when it came to their marriage. Now, Reba had up and left Daryl at least twice during their 37 years together. According to Reba's sister, Mary Nell, Daryl could be a bit mean and abusive at times. Now, just how abusive, nobody specified as far as I could find. Now, I mean, after all, folks have different definitions of exactly what abuse is. Now, I'd say that if somebody back in the 1990s said there was abuse, there was probably a bit of physical abuse going on, because the way I remember it, abuse in them days was defined as a physical by law. I don't think the law could get in the middle of anything less in them days, but I couldn't find anything on the law getting involved with Reba and Daryl, so we're left to figure it out on our own, I guess, exactly what kind of abuse we're looking at here and whether it plays into what happens later. Earlier in their lives together, they had a boy born prematurely who died in 1955. That was what folks say started all the problems they had. Back when mental health was, you know, just wasn't thought of as a route that anybody would take when trying to deal with something like that. And most folks just went back home straight after the funeral, got hard after whatever they was doing to start with before the tragedy took place, and just tried to stick it out and not mention it anymore to each other. They just kind of got stuck up and move on type deal going on. Now, mental health back then was thought of as being for crazy people, as I often heard folks say back when I was growing up. Then they had a girl, Deborah, born in 1956, and a son, Danny, born in 1960. And Danny, well, unfortunately, he had serious physical problems too, including seizures, and as fate would have it, he would end up dying in 1985, which didn't help anything as far as the Catlett's relationship was concerned. Folks can only take so much before they completely fall apart. The Catlett's, well, they kind of lived their whole lives in Sevier County, which happens to be smack in the middle of the Great Smoky Mountains. Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg, or, you know, Sevier County, just to give you an idea whereabouts I'm talking. Now, Reba was always a homemaker, while Darryl farmed cattle and worked at a textile mill. Now, together, they built up a pretty good mess of real estate holdings of some 800 to 900 acres. That's pretty impressive, folks, if you look at it. Now, Reba was the one that collected the rent on the properties. She'd always wanted to be a lawyer and managing real estate. I guess that just gave her a sense of doing something legal like that that she'd always wanted to do and something maybe she needed in her life that bad. And by 1992, the Catlett's had holdings valued at around $3 million. Now, that's pretty good money, folks. It'd be around $7 million in today's money. Now, their assets included Douglas Lake waterfront acreage prime for development in Jefferson County, which would be a nice dividend when it came time for development, I'd say, wouldn't you? But they also had a nice ranch house in Foxwood Drive, which was just a skip from downtown Sevierville. But for the most part, they lived separate lives. Darryl worked a graveyard shift in the mill and pretty much stayed downstairs in the house while Reba had run to the upstairs. Now, when they did happen to see each other, it was pretty much for meals before he went off to work at night. Now, folks, combine that with abuse and a whole lot of could be made out of it, but I just guess we probably shouldn't jump to conclusions just yet. Now, I mean, because after all, I worked a graveyard shift for a while, and it's tough to get enough sleep. Could be that he just stayed down there and get his sleep and came up to grab some grub on his way out the door to go to work for another day. Yeah, could be, as I see. But then again, maybe he and Reaver were better off doing their own separate things and just letting sleeping dogs lay. Kind of like they may have a disagreement that they couldn't settle and they just figured that they'd go on about their business and separately for a spell, I guess you'd say. That seems to be the most prominent explanation I think that I could find whilst I was looking at the case. Now, what the disagreement was, I couldn't tell you. I know I've seen couples who lose a child, though, just fall apart. And let alone losing two, that's a hard thing to try to get through, folks, and I can't imagine it. Could be that they both were just running on automatic and didn't even realize that they'd drifted that far apart. Darryl would say in July of 2000 that we never did go on vacation or do anything because I worked all the time. At the same time, the couple's daughter, Deborah, said Reba usually did her own hair, and if she clothes shopped, it was mostly at the yard sales. She's very frugal and very quiet, a very to herself person. She went on to say that Reba had high blood pressure, which she took medication for, and she was a borderline diabetic. Darryl added that Reba tended to the Catlett properties, and she enjoyed her grandchildren. Deborah Catlett had been married for a time to a man named Mike Chambers, and they had three sons. Reba told her husband the night of June 14th, 1992, that, which was a Sunday, by the way, that she'd be heading the next day to the Dandridge Courthouse to check out some tax records. You know, that's what they usually do when you're intending to buy a property or maybe find a property to buy. You want to make sure everything's in order before you do it. Now, they talked about that before he went to work. Now, don't sound too much like anybody was worked up about anything, if that's the truth, does it? If it's true being the key word, I guess you'd say. But according to Darryl, it was the last time he ever spoke to her. He was asked if he noticed anything unusual whatsoever when he talked to her, and he said, no, never noticed a thing. Deborah Catlett had a similar conversation with her the next morning. Reba was getting ready to leave when they talked on the phone, just like they talked about every day. Now, everything seemed to be perfectly normal. Investigators would later hear that Reba told somebody that she needed to buy some cleaning supplies and stop by Big Lots downtown. Now, there also were some reports that a Cadillac matching Reba's had been seen in the Big Lots parking lot the afternoon of June 14, 1992. Now, Deborah said that she didn't indicate to me that anything at all about Big Lots. Now, when he got off from work of the mill the morning of June 15th, Darryl said that he went straight to bed in his windowless downstairs room, just like he always did. A few hours later, he had to get up and attend a meeting at work, and then went back home, took a nap, and when he got up later at night to get ready for work, he realized it. Well, Reba wasn't nowhere around. In fact, Reba was just flat gone. Folks, I'll be right back. You're listening to Appalachian Murder, Mystery, and Legend with Larry Bentley. Now, the first thing Darryl did was call his daughter and then Reba's sister, Mary Nell. Now, Mary Nell told him that, she said, he called me and said she's missing, and she told him that we'll find her. And, if anybody knows on earth, knows where Reba's at, it'd be me. And the next day, nobody still had heard from Reba. And so Darryl went ahead and reported her missing to the police. Clearly evidence shows the Big Lots in downtown Sevierville had some significance in Reba's disappearance. That's where her dark-colored four-door Cadillac ended up. It was left there by somebody, I reckon for good. Or at least until somebody would find it and do something with it. It was found parked in the Big Lots parking lot at about 5:15 a.m. Tuesday, June 16th. There was no sign of Reba anywhere. They searched everywhere, except for the inside of the Cadillac, and they found no trace of Reba, not so much a fingerprint or anything on the outside of the caddy. Now, don't ask me why in the world they didn't impound it and process it, because I haven't got the slightest idea why they wouldn't do that. Mary Nell knew right then that something wasn't right about the car. For one thing, it was unlocked, and Reba never left the car unlocked. Then, odd as it was, after it was found, she said the police just asked her to drive it on back home to the Catlett place on Foxwood, but when she got inside it, the seat was pushed so far back she couldn't even reach the pedals, and she knew that Reba didn't drive it that way either. Now, there was no way that Reba was the last person that drove that Cadillac, she thought. Eventually, the car did end up in police custody. They finally processed it, but there wasn't a single clue to be found in it. The entire family, to the entire family, it looked like somebody had wiped it clean. Now, Darryl and Deborah both said police also searched their Foxwood home and parts of the property. Nothing seemed to be out of the ordinary. The couple's bank accounts looked like they'd been completely untouched. Some folks had the idea that Reba had been buried somewhere on the property. Unfortunately, and why I don't know, police weren't allowed to go on some of the property where she was said to be buried, so they made flyovers of the property to look to see if anything looked out of whack or disturbed, and they found nothing there either. And like I say, I have no idea why they weren't allowed to go search, or why they didn't even go get search warrants to do that. That would have been one of the things I think would be at the top of my list. Eventually, authorities would search the Douglas Lake area where the couple owned property. Again, they found nothing, absolutely nothing anywhere. 4 months after he last spoke to his wife, what did Darryl Catlett do? He goes downtown and files for divorce, and by the end of 1992, he'd retired from his mill job, too. He would go on and say, I just had to go on with my life. I mean, she wasn't going to come back, apparently, and she had plenty of time to come back if she was going to, but I didn't figure she was. Now, the court finally granted his motion for divorce in 1994, and Darryl remarried. He and his daughter split up Reba's assets. Now, she filed the paperwork later to have her mother formally declared dead. court made it official in October of 2000. Reba Catlett was officially dead. After he died in March of 2007, Darrell Catlett's obituary made no mention of his first wife, Reba. When Deborah Catlett's son, Aaron, died in 2023 motorcycle crash, no mention was made of his maternal grandmother in his obituary either. To me, that's odd as hell, folks. But I reckon it's just me. I don't know. Reba's sisters suspect Darrell was involved in her death. The fact that he filed for divorce 4 months after she disappears, Crawl's agent cut Shaw's nape. It was interesting to say the least. TBI special agent Maria Cutshaw is, you know, she's working the case and says that she remembers when it happened back when she was a little feller. Now, Agent Cutshaw said she has a theory about what happened to Reba, but it's something that she can't really get into. Now, I think there's a potential that there's more than one person involved here, or that there's more than one person that knows. I'll say that much, she said. This would be the perfect time for somebody who knows something to crawl up out of the woodwork and come tell investigators, she said. I think this was one of those cases where it's very important that if anybody's still out there that knows something, and then they come forward and tell us. Now, two of Reba's sisters say they've done all they know to do. Now, they do feel like Darrell had something to do with it, too, and they wish that if anybody knew anything, they'd come forward with the information, especially since Darrell's long gone and can't do anything about it if he did. All they ask is just to know what actually happened to their sister. So we're left in the end with one question, folks. Where's Reba? The impression that I'm getting is that the TBI might think that somebody close to Reba may have had a hand in making her disappear, and folks, I mean disappear the hard way. By close to Reba, I guess I mean that she knew him and at least pretty well. It could have even been somebody that she was collecting rent from, all the way up to, of course, Darrell himself, maybe. Now, I know this was a pretty short one, but there's folks out there waiting for some answers on this, and they deserve them. This one needed telling. Now, if you like the podcast, folks, throw us a like and a review and a rating and on whatever podcatcher you're listening on. Don't forget to follow us. Now come on over to Facebook group Appalachian Murder Mystery and Legend Podcast, where we talk Appalachian or about anything else you want to bring up. And I'll be back real soon with another Appalachian Murder Mystery or Legend, and I will see you then.